from deep inside your radio.
Well, I've been all around the world, but never had the Le Show Dome, the home Le Show Dome, so discombobulated for my... But, you know, you don't care about that. You're there to listen, and you're there at the same radio. It's all good for you. It's all good. Remember that? That was so hip a couple years ago. I think it was Dealer Talk. That was my my suspicion on the whole deal. Ladies and gentlemen, from the newly reconfigured Le Show Dome, I caution you, don't get too close to your radio, because I am so contagious. That's how I got it. No, not sitting next to the radio, but... And not kissing the radio, either. Don't ever do that. Ooh. That's just disgusting. I don't know. I haven't heard this on any domestic news today. But former British Prime Minister John Major, he of the gray demeanor, got a little less gray today on the British television show, interview show with David Frost, where he said... gave of himself the observation that Saddam Hussein, if attacked, could set off, and I think this was Major's word, Armageddon. That was his prediction. Not a prediction, but he said, you know, that could happen. He could attack Saudi Arabia, could attack Israel, could blow up Saudi oil fields, could blow up his own oil fields, just could blow up the world supply of Vitalis. I'm not sure exactly what all. But Major did say, if attacked, Saddam Hussein could trigger. Again, John Major's words. Gray, gray man, ladies and gentlemen, not given to hyperbole. An Armageddon. That's good breakfast television right there. I'm going to find it hard. I did find it hard to track this one down, although I swear to you, I did hear it. But it was in the middle of the night. I was delirious. I may have dreamed it, but I believe the BBC reported that their own version of the Department of Homeland Security. Yes, they've got one, too, although their Tom Ridge probably has lips. But they're coming out with their own recommendations, which do include duct tape, about which more in a moment, but which also includes the following piece of information. Don't watch too much television news. It might be frightening. I think that's, you know, whether or not there's a readiness issue involved, that's such good advice. Case in point, well, it wasn't really news, although it did trumpet its objectivity. The Fox special this week, I've seen some of it. I'm saving it. The Fox special where they paid Michael Jackson $5 million for the footage that his crew shot of the interview that Martin Bashir did with him that was sold to ABC by another British company. Is this all too confusing and too unimportant? So Fox paid Michael Jackson $5 million for the right to this footage, which, again, Michael Jackson's crew had shot, which was offstage footage, kind of off mic, while they were setting up for the interview. And adduced as proof that Martin Bashir had left out really important material out of his own broadcast that was seen on ABC about 4 million times last week, was footage of Martin Bashir telling Michael Jackson. This was Maury Povich, who was the narrator of this broadcast, by the way, appears determined to prove with his spouse, Connie Chung, that there is such a thing as a smarm cootie. I don't know who gave it to whom, but they got it. Maury Povich said, this is what you didn't hear on the original interview. And then they play this footage of Martin Bashir saying to Michael Jackson about his relationship with his children. And I could just quote it here. I don't have the tape. I must say, when I see you with your children, your relationship with your children is spectacular. When I see you with them, sometimes it makes me want to weep, unquote. And that was adduced as a positive statement. So I guess you have to pay Michael Jackson a little more than $5 million to make him appreciate irony. the aforementioned Maury Povich, ladies and gentlemen, he of the Smarm Cootie. And again, I don't know if he's the Smarm Cootie Mary or recipient, but it's in the family. It's definitely in the family. He emphasizes in that pugnacious Fox way, you know, where on the Fox News Channel they keep saying fair and balanced. He kept emphasizing that same pugnacious way, how this broadcast was not drawing any conclusions about Michael Jackson. It was designed to be objective so that you could make up your own mind. Maury's wraparounds, his narrative sequences, were shot with him standing at the front entrance to Neverland, the ultra-private property owned by, oh my God, Michael Jackson. What a coincidence. But I'm sure when they made the deal for Maury to shoot the wraparound footage on Michael's property, Michael insisted that Maury be totally objective because that's the Fox way. Hello, welcome to the show.
And rented a king-size bed for all his friends to play on. Well, he's the eternal kid. He made the room a playground with big toys and acrobats. He wants a second childhood, and what's wrong with that? And they went on a big shopping spree. Little boys out from midnight till three. And as long as they're happy, there's one rule for them. Checkbook and a few famous friends. Yeah. Well, in another country, our children are taken by force. Someone led them laughing, made them feel safe, of course. I watch the parents crying, please just return them unharmed. Michael goes to Vegas, no one's alarmed, and I can't hardly speak. It's all right when it's wrapped up in bows. Any parents say, go, darling, there's one rule for men. A son don't need any, just a checkbook and a few famous friends. Yes. No one was hurt or harmed. We love to watch the circus, but sometimes the clowns alarm me. And I can't hardly speak what I know. That it's all right when it's wrapped up in bows. And your parents say, go, darling, there's one rule for them. Some don't need it. A checkbook and a few famous friends. Yes. Yeah. One rule for many, some don't need any. Just a checkbook and a few famous friends.
Oh,
shouting all about love. Well, they cheated you like a dog, and you were the one who had made it so clear. Oh, Lord, years ago, talking all about how to give, they don't act with much honesty. Someone, the devil's best friend, someone who offended all, were living in their bad dream. They've forgotten all about mankind, and you were the one they backed up to the wall all those years ago. You were the one who imagined it all those years ago.
Be glad when I got the blues.
Yeah,
come on, come on.
And I feel so damn good. I'll be glad when I got the blues.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa. Come on. And I'm so down being up. I'll be winning when I start to lose. Well.
All right.
from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this very disorienting edition, just for me. I've been, ladies and gentlemen, so many times walked into what a scenic designer or an art director on a television show or a movie thinks a radio station should look like, based on, you know, no research, just on, well, yeah, there's a mic and some things. Always so dead wrong, so laughably. You know, you just say, well, how would you be supposed to do this and that simultaneously in a radio station that was set up like this? Oh, I don't know. It just looked good. And it's so refreshing now to come into a radio facility that's actually designed exactly that way by to all appearances, a possibly vision-impaired art director. Anyway, that's my problem. What's yours? No, I really don't want to know. Really, this week, really don't want to know. Apropos of Fox and their approach to objectivity, don't you know? This might help to clarify that. Listen for the money quote. Nearly 35 million people watched Evan Marriott ask Zora Andrich if she would go steady with him on Fox's Joe Millionaire finale Monday night. Of course, it's not the finale. Now they go out on a date. We got to watch that. Fox's biggest audience ever for an entertainment broadcast, stretching the word just slightly. It's also 10 million more viewers than watched any of the various Michael Jackson specials the same night. Among women aged 18 to 34 who were watching TV at 9 p.m., 50% were tuned into Joe Millionaire. It was an enormous success for the Fox network. What Fox was most excited about in the showing of Joe Millionaire was that its fans were upscale and educated. Definitely not the same kind of audience attracted by Fox early reality programs such as When Animals Attack, said Fox Entertainment Chief Gail Berman in an interview with the Washington Post. Quote, "The monetization of reality is the key to this whole thing," unquote. Would you like that to come by just one more time? Just to roll it around in your head. "The monetization of reality is the key to this whole thing." She continued, "One of the reasons Fox was criticized in the past for its reality programming was that the reality we used years ago was difficult to monetize. The When Animals Attack kind of programs were not the most ideal program for advertisers to go in. That is not the case with the reality series we're running now. It's an argument our competitors have often gone to, but they can't go to now." Fox has monetized reality, ladies and gentlemen. We are so proud, those of us in the Fox family. And by family, just read some Eugene O'Neill to get some idea of what we mean by the Fox family. I make frequent reference these days on the broadcast to things that are close enough for journalism. Well, here's a correction that's close enough from the New York Times of about a week ago. Because of an editing error, a front-page article yesterday about diplomatic developments in the Iraqi crisis misidentified the Bush administration official who said about the weapons inspectors in Iraq, quote, "At some point it will become obvious that it's time for them to go," unquote. It was an administration official speaking on condition of anonymity, not Condoleezza Rice. Yeah, that's too close. See? They got too close. On the other hand, they got just close enough in a sidebar to a story about the Rhode Island Club fire by Ben Ratliff, writing about the band Great White. The band Motley Crue is spelled both in print and on the web edition of the New York Times with the fanciful non-standard O and U that the band favors. The last paragraph mentions semi-fictitious rock group Spinal Tap. In print, but not on the web, its name is spelled with an even more fanciful and non-standard pair of dots above the N, as in the band's logo. A listener who tipped me off to this says he doesn't know whether the credit goes to a copy editor or a spell check compiler. So the New York Times put the two N's, put the two dots above the N in Spinal Tap, ladies and gentlemen. That is damn good journalism. And now a special feature of this broadcast, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
I'm not even going to include the nightclub owners who apologized. But I'm going to include these. Eduardo Sanchez Junco, owner of Hello Magazine, has apologized to Catherine Zeta-Jones and Michael Douglas for publishing unauthorized snapshots of their wedding ceremony. "I am sorry," the magazine owner told the couple's lawyer, Michael Tugendhat. In Zeta-Jones' testimony to the High Court in London last week, the actress claimed the tacky images in Hello made her look overweight and the reception looked like a disco. The indignant couple filed an $800,000 lawsuit against the magazine. "It was a devastating time," said Douglas. "The damage and stress that we've gone through is irreparable." While apologetic, Sanchez Junco said, "I think that their attitude was a little bit exaggerated." Hello's paparazzi shots hit newsstands 3 days before an approved photo spread in rival British publication OK. By the way, both Hello and OK have exclamation points at the end of their names. Just to let you know how excited they are. OK had paid the couple $1.6 million for exclusive rights to cover the nuptials. Those would be non-tacky, I'm sure. Sanchez Junco denied the unauthorized spread was printed out of revenge after the couple refused a similar offer from Hello. Hello? Okay. Talk about reverse synergy, ladies and gentlemen. From the New York Post. Another part of the Fox family. Paging Mr. O'Neill. A two-sentence blind item run in the New York Post December 19th about a, quote, Hall of Fame baseball hero, unquote, has sparked a series of unfortunate consequences for which we, the New York Post, are very sorry. The item said the sports hero, quote, cooperated with a best-selling biography only because the author promised to keep secret that he is gay, unquote. 2 weeks later, the Daily News' Michael Gross, after finding Sandy Koufax, a lefty's legacy by Jane Levy on the bestseller list, named Koufax as the player and ran a photo of him. Koufax himself, an intensely private man, was deeply offended by our item, says the New York Post. The author, Jane Levy, has denied making any deal with Koufax and called our item erroneous. We apologize to both Koufax and Levy for getting it wrong. Koufax is so steamed, he has cut off all connection with the Los Angeles Dodgers. Like the New York Post, part of the Fox family. I hope he's still watching The Simpsons. That's just all I can say. Both an apology and a be careful how you use humor item. South Brunswick, New Jersey. Brad Benson has learned this much. There are people who can take a Saddam Hussein joke, and there are people who just don't get it. Mr. Benson ran a radio commercial last week for his Hyundai and Mitsubishi dealership. The gimmick, he offered Mr. Hussein a free car every year if he'd leave Iraq forever. Maybe he'll pick the four-wheel drive Outlander, he said in the commercial, a perfect choice for running away in the desert. Outlaw country music singers and used-to-be movie stars may think there is no such thing as bad publicity, but car buyers have a lot of choices. Even a former offensive lineman for the New York Giants like Mr. Benson, with a diamond Super Bowl ring the size of a shift knob on his finger, was dismayed when his voice mailbox began to clog with angry messages. Your car dealership should never remain in business, said a man who thought the ad was about Osama bin Laden. Yeah, a lot of confusion there. Mr. Benson was wounded. I wasn't out to offend everyone. Anyone. I thought we would have some fun. Radio station managers were calling to urge him to pull the ad. Mr. Benson apologized. In a new ad broadcast over the weekend, stirring music played in the background while Mr. Benson spoke. Quote, a lot of people called and they were offended by my ad, and for that, I'm truly sorry. I thought with all the doom and gloom in the media these days, we could use a little laugh. Then he said things got really weird. People started calling to complain about the complainers. Anybody who would want to make you apologize, they should go live in that country, one woman said. And finally, Barry Humphries and his subversive humor have caused an outcry in the United States, where the powerful Hispanic lobby has accused the Australian satirist of racism. This is from an Australian publication, hence their haughty attitude towards us and our powerful lobbies. Vanity Fair, the magazine for which Humphreys pens an advice column in the guise of his alter ego Dame Edna Everidge, is apologizing for comments considered degrading to Spanish Americans. Humphreys replied to a reader who wanted advice on which foreign language to study, saying friends had told him, quote, everyone is going to be speaking Spanish in 10 years. Humphreys, as Edna, would have none of this. Forget Spanish, he wrote. There's nothing in that language worth reading. As for everyone speaking it, what twaddle? Who speaks it that you really are desperate to talk to? The help? Your leaf blower? While Australians would probably understand Humphreys was being ironic, his words were taken literally and led to a campaign for a boycott of the magazine until it issued an apology. New York management consultant Wendy Maldonado initiated the campaign, but she may not understand Dame Edna, is in fact Barry Humphreys, referring to him as she in her complaints. Dame Edna could have chosen any number of amusing responses, Miss Maldonado wrote in a letter signed by many leading Hispanic Americans. However, she responded using cheap two-dimensional stereotypes of Latinos and Latin Americans, revealing not only her racism but also her profound ignorance of who we are. Ignoring Miss Maldonado's ignorance of who he is. Vanity Fair's apology will say the magazine regrets the offense. In the role of Dame Edna, Humphreys practices a long comedic tradition of making statements that are tasteless, wrongheaded, or taboo. Patently absurd comments about Spanish literature and Spanish speakers were offered in the spirit of outrageous comedy. Those, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week. Yeah, I'm taking it slowly. Hang it easy on myself, because it's confusing here. Is it duct tape or duct? The first name for duct tape was duck. During World War II, the U.S. military needed a waterproof tape to keep the moisture out of ammunition cases, so they enlisted the Johnson & Johnson Permacell Division to manufacture the tape. Because it was waterproof, everyone referred to it as duck, like water off a duck's back. After the war, the housing industry was booming, and somebody discovered that the tape was great for joining the heating and air conditioning ductwork, so the color was changed from army green to the silvery color we have today, and people started to refer to it as duct tape. So it's either duck or duct. Viaduct? I don't know. Ladies and gentlemen, I really do not know. Here's... You know, a staple of radio broadcasters is to pluck out goofy lawsuits. Here's how lazy I am today. In an effort to strike a blow against movie commercials, a Cook County, Illinois high school teacher is a plaintiff in a class action lawsuit filed this week that charges Lowe's Cineplex Entertainment Group with failing to start movies at scheduled times and showing commercials for up to 10 minutes. I teach media. And I love movies, says Miriam Fish, an Evanston resident who teaches at Stevenson High School in Lincolnshire. It's frustrating when you go to the movies and you expect the movie to begin on time. It's like a breach of contract. Oh, darling, don't go there. The suit filed in Cook County Circuit Court accuses Lowe's of deluging captive audiences with unannounced and unwanted advertisements. One of her lawyers, Douglas Litowitz, said the lawsuit also aims to limit commercial creep. Litowitz says anywhere from 4 to 10 minutes of commercials usually precede the featured attraction. The movie industry went for 100 years without commercials, he said. Our basic proposition is if you are forced to watch commercials, you should be compensated for it. Hey, babe, have you flown lately? You count the number of commercials after the or before the movie in a plane? At least in a movie theater, you know, you can go somewhere. In a plane, okay. Just more opportunity for the Litowitzes. Litowitzigation to take place. Ladies and gentlemen, just some facts as we speed down this road. In 1982, the United States State Department removed Iraq from its list of state sponsors of terrorism and fought off efforts by the U.S. Congress to put it back on the list in 1985. The U.S. blocked condemnation of Iraq's chemical attacks in the U.N. Security Council. The U.S. was the sole country to vote against a 1986 Security Council statement condemning Iraq's use of mustard gas against Iranian troops. Iraq imported uranium from Portugal, France, and Italy. By the way, speaking of uranium, we now know that Iran's nuclear development program is way ahead of Iraq's. But they're the less evil part of the axis of evil. As former United States Defense Intelligence Agency officers have recently revealed to the New York Times, the U.S. prepared detailed battle planning for Iraqi forces in the war against Iran, even as Iraq drew worldwide public condemnation for repeated use of chemical weapons against Iran. According to a senior Defense Intelligence Agency official, if Iraq had gone down, it would have had a catastrophic effect on Kuwait and Saudi Arabia, and the whole region might have gone down. A former participant in one of the programs told the New York Times, senior Reagan administration officials did nothing to interfere with a program in which chemical weapons were integrated into Iraqi fire plans for large-scale operations. The Pentagon, quote, wasn't so horrified by Iraq's use of gas, said one veteran of the program. It was just another way of killing people. Whether with a bullet or phosgene, it didn't make any difference. This operation was the recapture of the Fao Peninsula. A U.S. Senate inquiry in 1995 revealed that during the Iran-Iraq War, the U.S. had sent Iraq samples of all the strains of germs used by Iraq later to make biological weapons. The strains were sent by the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention to the same sites in Iraq where U.S. weapons inspectors later determined were part of Iraq's biological weapons program. That, according to the Times of India. Spicy. Enjoy.
Visitar a Grécia no futuro. Ladies and gentlemen, it's one of those occasions when I'm a little under the weather, and what I like to do to maintain the high entertainment and infotainment value of the broadcast is to open the phone lines and see what you're thinking, and maybe you can move the conversation along a little bit, as we like to say in the radio business. So, yes, line one, you're on the air.
Hi, Harry. You sound great. I know you don't feel too well, but you sound just in the pink, and I love you on the TV Land voiceovers very much.
Oh, thank you so much. I didn't realize that anybody knew that I did those. Your name?
Hello.
Your name is?
Ira Reifelman.
Ira Reifelman?
Yes, Ira Reifelman. That's right.
Reifelman.
Reifelman, yeah.
I see. All right. We only need your first name, Ira. How are you? What's on your mind?
I'm actually the gentleman who bought the truck from Scott Peterson, which I know is so big in the news, and you being kind of a news nut, if you will. You might be interested in it. And I just thought I've been kind of waiting to be talked to about it, and strangely enough, no one's tugged my sleeve on it. And I just thought I love your show. And
thank you so much.
I love you. Did I say I love the TV Land?
TV Land,
stuff,
yes,
which I do.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. We have done absolutely nothing about the Lacey Peterson story.
I know that, and I respect that, because one thing I hate is how people are just like buzzards all over the story. The poor woman disappeared, and people just, everybody's trying to get their little 5 minutes of fame or whatever it is, and I respect that you haven't really done much on it at all.
But we could probably own this story.
If you want to talk to me about it, I'm happy to do it.
Sure, you're on the line, might as well. You've paid for the call, Ira. So you bought the truck that was Lacey's truck, wasn't it?
Indeed, although I had really, Harry, no idea when I went there to, you know, I saw it in the recycler,
mm-hmm.
and it was just what I was looking for. And I get there, and there's all these cameras and news people, and I thought, this has got to be some used car.
Yeah, right.
I mean, this has got to be a heck of a, can you say hell of a used car?
Sure.
This has got to be a heck of a used car,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
And then, of course, naturally, then I find, oh, this is a whole Peterson Magilla.
Yeah. Was it actually a Magilla? Magilla doesn't make trucks, do they?
Magilla people?
Yeah.
I think you're thinking of Matsushita or something.
Oh, okay. Once you realized what the vehicle in question was, what was your response? I mean, did you bid high?
Well, I tried to chew him down just a shade,
hey,
you know, because...
excuse me, Ira?
I figured...
Ira?
Yeah?
We really, really, really don't use that kind of language anymore. We really, really don't.
Oh.
I mean, would you say you welched him on a bet, or you gypped
him? I'm sorry. I thought it was kind of one of those innocuous phrases like nigger on
payday. No.
We don't. Offense,
we don't say those either, Ira.
Sorry.
Okay. So you negotiated him.
Yeah, I got a nice deal on it,
yeah.
And, you know, I'm pretty happy with it.
I mean, you wouldn't say you Frenched your girlfriend, would you?
I'm really not seeing anybody at the moment.
No, okay.
Although,
it's not what I was...
Always on the lookout, you
okay.
know?
All right.
Love to settle down, which is kind of why I wanted the car. I wanted to use it for carpooling.
Carpooling where?
Although I'm not married and I really have no kids, I figure, you know, trying to get all the ducks in a row for that day, you know.
I see. You build it and they'll come, huh?
Hoping the good Lord will, you know.
Ira, what do you do for a living?
Pardon me?
What do you do for a living?
I have a mailboxes, et cetera, out here at Hazeltine and Magnolia.
Uh-huh.
And come on down, we'll wrap up your stuff and send it right out.
I really have no stuff to...
Bowl of, you know, hard candy right on the counter for you. And...
Yeah. Yeah. And so now are you using the vehicle in your work?
Well, I can walk to work.
Oh, I see.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Saves on gas. And
that's unusual.
Walk, you know?
That's unusual.
It isn't running. I don't know if people say running, but I say, you know, good walk.
Good walk is always better. But that's unusual out in that neck of the woods to walk to work.
It is.
Yeah.
I have a couple of DWIs. And.
Oh, I see.
So I'm kind of just counting the days when I can kind of get behind the wheel again.
I see. Now, did you...
Misunderstanding, really, more than actual drunk driving.
Did you know that this was Scott Peterson that you were purchasing the truck from?
I did not. And now, of course, I'm involved in a whole imbroglio that I had no idea I would be involved in the imbroglio.
Yeah, which imbroglio is that?
This whole Scott Peterson, Lacey Peterson missing thing.
Oh, how are you involved in it? I mean...
Well, I bought the car. And
yeah.
I guess that's the only way I'm involved in it.
I see. Has law enforcement authorities haven't contacted you, have they?
No, no one has at all, which
I
is
see.
Why it's such a kick to be on the radio about it, finally, something, you know, on somewhere.
It's good to have you. Why? So you wanted the car for carpooling, but as I understand it, you have no real need for a vehicle or
not right now.
Use for,
but, you know, you don't want to wait to get the umbrella till it rains. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So is it up on blocks on your lawn?
I don't really have a lawn so much as a, it's kind of a apartment building, but no, it's in great shape, and I'm gonna be using it.
Where is the vehicle now?
I can see it right from my window right now.
Yeah. Where is it? On the street?
Yeah.
Wow. Just right on the street.
Yep.
Huh. Now, you said your name is Ira Rifleman?
That's right.
That's an interesting name. Is that...
this cute story about my name, Harry, by the way, especially with your whole TV land, old TV show thing. In 1962, my father loved the show The Rifleman so much, he changed our surname. It was my actual name, I'm Ira Zuckerman. But my dad loved Chuck Connors and loved that whole Western thing and the Rifleman. And so one day, kids, from now on, you're going to be signing your school report cards, or, Rifleman. So I'm Ira Rifleman now. And I've been Ira Rifleman since 1962.
And
you can't get, I don't know if you have any say about what you put on the TV land there at all. But,
no, I don't.
Oh, okay. But if you did, Rifleman is very good family show and great values and,
no, I know.
The Rifleman part of it throws you off because you think it's going to be violent, but it's really how he chooses not to use the gun.
Huh. So I would imagine then you're not a very good shot?
I'm a pretty good shot. I go down to the rifle range.
Interesting.
And I'm Ira Rifleman, and something we have fun with that, Rifleman's here.
Yeah,
Range one, Rifleman's,
Yeah.
Once in a while I go down there.
Did you get to know Scott Peterson at all during the transaction?
The joke of it is we sort of did get to know each other just a little bit. And as a matter of fact, we when he was supposed to be down in Mexico recently, I don't know if you knew about that.
I haven't
followed. Everybody's kind of looking for him.
Yeah.
He was actually with me over in Bakersfield at one of the Big Wheels shows. We became kind of friendly.
Yeah.
And I am crazy about Big Wheels. And Scott kind of got into it. And
what's Big Wheels exactly?
Just any vehicle with really big wheels.
Oh, I see. Like monster truck kind of deal?
Trucks and I just loved wheels ever since I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
And anyway, so Scott was actually with me, tense as can be. And I said, geez, and sometimes you can kind of open up to someone you don't know all that well.
Sure.
And
like you're
he
doing
was awfully tense. And, before I was kind of swept up with the wonder of wrapping people's packages, I was going to be a licensed masseuse. And I was actually thinking going down that way. And I actually gave Scott kind of a hot oil massage, and he had never... Cute story, I don't know if you have time for this, but...
I think we do,
He had never been massaged by a man.
Huh.
And he really... It really was great. And I... Long story short, I decided... I went into the mailboxes, et cetera. And I was like days away from getting my massage license. But I woke up one morning, I realized, I find the human body disgusting.
Hmm.
I don't know. And I said, no, this is not for me.
Yeah.
It's just not really... much about this whole Peterson thing, just something about me. I don't know how you feel about the human body, and maybe that's why I haven't married. Although a lot of it's probably just luck who you meet. And
sure. Ira, how did you get from a Big Wheel show to a place where you could give him a hot oil massage?
Well, you just talk, and you kind of like, I said, what's going on with you? Yeah, I know there's this whole thing with your wife is missing and you're not necessarily a suspect but being looked at.
Yeah.
But is there anything else going on? You're so tense,
Yeah.
And he said, no, I'm tense about that mostly.
No, but I mean,
man, roll your head and breathe for me.
Were you giving him the massage at the Big Wheel show?
No, we shared a room at the down in Bakersfield. We're about to go to the Big Wheel show, and he looked. You don't want to go to a Big Wheel show all like tense.
All tense.
I mean,
yeah.
The whole idea is,
fun.
Loose and,
relaxation.
And really look at the big wheels in a relaxed way. I said, you want to do a little Greco-Roman wrestling? Because I was really great at that. College says, no, I'm not really. And he said, well, how about a hot oil massage? He said, what's that? And I gave him one of those. And he was fine. And we kind of, you can't give a guy a hot oil massage without getting to know the person talking a little bit.
Yeah,
if you get massages. But
I don't.
We just sort of bonded. I mean, no great earth-shattering epiphanies or anything, but just we became good pals, I would say, to a degree.
Do you always carry hot oil with you on you, just on the...
I did at that time,
I see.
Now with the mailboxes, et cetera, I don't have as much of a call for it.
Well, but this was just very recently, wasn't it?
Pardon me?
This was just very recently that you gave him this massage, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
So, I mean...
But this all happened quick,
I see.
And I... There was this mailbox, et cetera, that I just was able to jump right into.
I see.
Take over the lease and
yeah.
Once in a while, you just gotta jump. And
you gotta grab
what your gut says.
You gotta grab for the gold, huh?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So Ira, I'm going to ask you probably the money question here, the one that's going to maybe allow us to own the Lacey Peterson story, the way people in journalism like to say, at least for the day. Having gotten to know Scott after having bought the vehicle, do you think he's guilty?
Wow, that is the big question.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to say this, Harry. We all remember Richard Jewell, what happened there.
Yep.
Who, by the way, I just coincidentally happened to buy a motorcycle from once.
What?
A long time ago, way before that whole Atlanta thing.
Get out of here. You
can't. Seriously, just coincidentally. But anyway, I really don't know what happened. You know, do not know if he's guilty. Do not think so.
Yeah.
This is not the guy I looked at big wheels with would ever do anything like that.
Yeah.
I will say one thing, and again, I don't know if this is a scoop for your listeners or not.
Yeah.
We talked, and I will say one thing that I do know about Scott that I think not a whole lot of people know.
Mm-hmm.
If you want me to say it.
Sure.
Can't get in trouble legally.
No, go ahead.
He can't read.
What?
Cannot read. And when we were down in Bakersfield for the Big Wheel Show,
yeah.
I did all the ordering at the restaurants from the menu. And I'm not saying I have a theory about what happened. God forbid he did do it. But I will say maybe she found out after a few years of their marriage he couldn't read. Maybe she teased him about it. He blew sky high. You know.
This is a theory.
Ba-ding, ba-ding, whatever.
This is a theory.
You know?
This is a theory.
And that's just a theory. I mean, I don't want to speculate. I'm not a criminologist.
You're not a criminologist?
No, I have a mailbox, et cetera, over at Magnolia and Hazeltine.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
So your plans for the vehicle now are just to wait until the DUIs expire and then what?
Well, actually, I only have a vehicle for another couple of days. I just recently sold it again.
Really? To whom?
You may want to talk to the guy who I'm selling it to.
Who's that?
I've sold it to the guy who sold Scott the insurance policy, actually. Another weird coincidence. I'm not one for this whole conspiracy hoodoo and weird kind of psychic stuff, but it is an amazing coincidence, I guess.
Yeah. How did you run into Richard Jewell?
Well, I just happened to be down there in Atlanta, and this was long before this whole that he even got famous.
Yeah.
But when I saw, geez, that's the guy I bought the motorcycle from.
Huh.
Met his mother. His mother had me over.
Wow. So you knew right away that he wasn't guilty of...
I knew right away he wasn't guilty, although this was like a year or two before it even happened.
Yeah, but I mean, when you saw him on TV a year later and you said, that's the guy I bought the motorcycle from, but...
I was absolutely flabbergasted.
I mean, you said to yourself right away he couldn't possibly be guilty of the thing?
Absolutely not. The vehicle was exactly as he had said it was.
Yeah.
He had given me a very good value on it. I said, this is not a man who would, you know, blow people up to become a hero at all.
Yeah.
This was a good, solid guy. Heart's in the right place. Lives with his mother, which I think we all want to do.
Yeah, of course we do. Now, let me just follow up a little bit on the Scott Peterson vehicle. What kind of condition was it in?
It was in fine condition.
Yeah?
Very good condition. Very happy with it. Pink slip was in the glove and off to the races, you know?
Radio work?
Yeah, radio work's great.
Yeah.
And
CD?
One of those nice bass things.
Uh-huh.
Adjust the bass.
Yeah. CD player?
Yeah, yeah, oh, sure.
Yeah, yeah. And what is it, a stick shift or a...
automatic.
Automatic four-wheel drive?
As long as you can park it anywhere.
Yeah. Although you're not driving it.
No, I imagine you could park it anywhere.
I see. You've parked it somewhere, but that you're imagining you could park it...
it's parked somewhere now, yeah.
Yeah, but you're...
You're right. You're going to hold... You're a stickler.
Yeah.
You could park it anywhere, and I did park it anywhere.
Well, you parked it somewhere.
Yeah. You can park it somewhere.
Yeah. Ira, this is an amazing story.
Is it?
Yeah. And I'm just, you know, tickled pink that you happen to be at the other end of the...
Well, as I said, you know, I'm an enormous fan. And...
Well, at the end of this conversation, you had a message for Scott Peterson, what would it be?
I mean, if I could just say anything to him?
Yeah, I don't even know if he's listening, but I don't know if anybody else is listening.
Sure
either.
He is.
Yeah.
I'd say, Scott... Where's the free gallon of windshield wiper fluid you promised me? Because that's really the only thing he didn't...
Wow.
You know, was not as promised.
Hmm.
That was a little disappointing. And again, I'm saying that's enough of evidence that,
No.
Murderer.
But it's the little things that count.
Well, it's the only thing that And I mean, you know what it is? I think he probably just is so crazed with what's going on.
You think he forgot?
But I don't, you know, I try to call about it, and, oh, boy, trying to get through to him now is ridiculous.
Yeah, he's like a celebrity or something.
Yeah, so the hell with it. It's just some labor fluid.
Yeah. But that would be your only message to him, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess so.
All right. Ira Rifleman, formerly Zuckerman, good luck with the mailboxes thing.
Thank you, Harry, and good luck with all your stuff that you do that's so great.
Thank you, and good luck with everything, and thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
And I hope you don't get overwhelmed by the media, but, you know, I wouldn't be surprised.
So, I hope so.
So be prepared. Ira Rifleman, ladies and gentlemen, on our Newsmaker line.
Ladies and gentlemen, the United States is sending about 3,000 troops to engage in a major combat offensive in the northern Philippines, according to the Washington Post. According to the New York Times, the United States will send more than 1,700 troops to the Philippines. Or the New York Times says the United States will send nearly 2,000 troops to the Philippines. The Sydney Morning Herald says U.S. troops in the Philippines will serve only as advisors. The New York Times says the troops will not be limited to an advisory role. So, why not believe it all? Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the powerful shortwave transmitter of WBCQ, the planet at 7.415 megahertz, across the vast sweep of North America on Sirius satellite radio, and around the globe called Earth, on your computer, whenever you want it, at two different locations, www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. And it would be just like you coming up to the United States Comedy Arts Festival this week for perhaps your only chance to see Kelsey Grammer and John Goodman, Christopher Guest, Michael McKean, Annette O'Toole, Nancy Cartwright, Tress McNeil, and Tom Leopold in J. Edgar the Musical, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. And Judith Owen. I think tickets are still available. It's in Aspen. What could be wrong? The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, the satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.